5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
All right, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobbio. It's Chris Algieri. We're presented by PPV.com. Happy Bakram Murtazaliyev fight week, Chris Algieri.
Nice. We got a lot of fights this week, and that's the one you start with. That's that's interesting. Yes, it is a happy time when Murtazaliyev fights. It's a lot of good fights this weekend, but that one is always one that's going to stand out because the guy is just, he is the unknown dark horse of the division.
He sure is. He's fighting Josh Kelly on Saturday. We also have, obviously, Teofimo and Shakur. We have our fight party on Saturday. We have Xander Zayas fighting Abbas Barao over in Puerto Rico. It is a very busy fight week. It is going to be a very busy Saturday night. First off, our episode is brought to you by PPV.com. They are the leader in live events. Stream them to your phone, tablet, big screen, any device, no subscription. So living in that subscription world, I just got Paramount Plus, so I can watch the Zuffa boxing, which we'll talk about on this episode. For PPV.com, you go fight by fight, live interactive chat, all that good stuff. We're going to be heading out to big fights this year, courtesy of PPV.com. So follow them on socials for all that good stuff. And also, our fight party is quickly approaching. It's this Saturday. I got to get all my fight fixins. Got to get my outfit ready. Got to get everything ready. We love all the tweets that I got yesterday about everyone that's coming through. Jack Doyle's restaurant and bar. It's like a couple steps away from the Garden. We're going to be hanging out all night. Some of you obviously have tickets to the fight. Tio and Shakur will go into the fight. Those of you that don't want to come and hang out with us at the bar, we'll be posted up pretty much the entirety of the night. We're trying to get the Zayas fight over on the screens. So it should be a great night on Saturday at our pre-fight party that you can buy tickets to in our link right now. $20 gets you a free drink, $25 at the door. So do the right thing. Buy your tickets now.
Dude, right, Chris? $20 in 2026? That's like, I mean, you can barely get a cup of coffee for that in New York City. And you're going to get access to the party and the drink. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
That's what I'm talking about. Jack Doyle's restaurant and bar. All right, so let's get into the boxing. It was a pretty jam-packed weekend between the Zuffa boxing on Friday, then the Murtazaliyev Cruz fight on Saturday night. Matchroom had a card over there in Vegas. Let's start there. We'll start with the championship fight. Really good fight. I mean, this is evenly matched, high-level boxing at its finest. We hyped it up all week long that it was going to be one of those types of fights, and it was. Raymond Murtazaliyev retains his IBF lightweight strap. He hands Andy Cruz his first career loss. Max DeLuca had it a draw. Steve Weissel had it 116-112. Tim Cheatham had it 118-110. Bad card, but at least he had the right guy winning because I thought Raymond Murtazaliyev did just enough. I thought he won those final two rounds. Pretty good fight, though. Pretty even fight. And Murtazaliyev just solidified himself. He is legitimate lightweight champion. Raymond Murtazaliyev, good fight.
You mentioned all the hype that we had leading up to this fight because we knew it was just a good matchup and had the potential to be a fantastic fight. It's so nice when the hype of a good fight turns out to be a good fight because very often that doesn't happen. But this fight was excellent. It was really, really good, really high level stuff. Yeah, the drastic difference in their styles was evident immediately. You know, and we kind of knew that going in, but you just saw what the game plan was for both guys right away. And for Murtazaliyev, it was pressure, 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 pressure. You know, stay on him, make him trade with you, make him fight with you, make it physical. Murtazaliyev is humongous. I mean, I don't know if I've seen a lightweight that big ever. I mean, he's tall, he's long, he filled in after the weigh-in. And Andy Cruz, man, you saw his style. He's sidestepping, moving, blasting quick, good 1-2s, using that jab, very slick defense. The fight was very competitive because if you really watched, Cruz didn't get hit all that much. He rolls and slides and slips with those shots really, really well. Doesn't take a lot of heavy shots. But the consistency of Murtazaliyev, the pressure, That was what won the day, and the right guy did win. Just like you said, even about Cheatham, his scorecard was crazy, but the right guy did win. Murataya, I think hands down won that fight.
Yeah, Murataya Cruz outlanded Murataya 176-175 in total connects.
Shows how close the fight was. Yeah, but the difference Murataya, was in power.
Power to edge went to Murataya. Just in punches landed, and then you can use your eyes to see who was landing the cleaner, harder shots. It was Murataya. Murataya threw more punches, so he outworked Andy Cruz. I loved the game plan for Murataya, and it seemed like he's a type of fighter that's a lot, kind of like no frills. We don't know much about this guy. He doesn't do crazy interviews, not bombastic. He's not on Instagram going crazy. You could just tell that this dude just is a gym rat. He's got a great trainer in Robert Garcia, who's getting his flowers today, as he should, best trainer in boxing. You could just tell that this guy had a game plan, and it was, I'm going to come forward. I'm going to apply crazy pressure. I'm going to effectively cut off the ring.
Yes.
And we watch a lot of boxing, Chris. We watch a lot of boxing at the lower levels, prospect levels. Things I don't see anymore today in boxing is jabs. I don't see fighters cut off a ring effectively, and I don't see combination punching. Murataya cut off the ring beautifully. I thought he could have let that right hand go a little more, but that's only because Cruz was firing himself and had some great counter shots as well. But Murataya's game plan and his will outshined and outworked and outlasted Cruz, because Cruz put up a great fight. I have people in my mentions like, oh, this is what you get for going against Andy Cruz. This is what you get for picking Andy Cruz to win. I'm like, give me a break. It was an even fight up through 10. And it wasn't like some blowout. So Andy Cruz was in that fight. It's just that Murataya had that championship mentality towards the end and won those final two rounds and just prevailed. That's all it was. He prevailed. Like, his game plan and his skills were just slightly better than Andy Cruz's, who will be back. I believe Cruz will be back. But Murataya, man, that game plan was superb.
Yeah, and I'm going to give credit to where it's due. Tommy the Razor Randone, him and Paulie have a show together where they talk about bets. And Tommy brought up a great point. He's like, when you just look at the rounds of experience as a professional, Andy Cruz just hasn't been there. 12 rounds is hard. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you've done. 12 rounds is difficult. 12 rounds at a championship level, I argue, is the most difficult thing to do in sports. It is the metabolic demand on you during a 12-round contest is off the charts. And I thought Andy did well. I thought Cruz did really well. For a guy who'd never been there, he didn't completely teeter off in the last two rounds. Yes, did he lose those two rounds because Murataya was just too much, especially the 12th? Yes, but it wasn't because he completely teetered off. He was still throwing hard shots. He still looked like fresher than most. Fought well in those later rounds. He was a good fighter. Just the better man won. Like that happens. Murataya just fought a better fight that night. But all in all, I think it was really good. And I think you still should look at Andy Cruz and be like, yeah, this guy will be back, just like you said.
Yeah, they were separated by six or less punches in, I want to say, like 10 of the 12 rounds or 9 of the 12 rounds.
Very
tight. So it's razor-thin type of fight. But you're right. The final couple rounds were, I wouldn't say, Cruz didn't fall off a cliff. Like, his output slowed down, and Murataya's ramped up. And, you know, Murataya only went 12 once, and that was before that with Abdulov, which was in May of last year. Yeah, and Cruz has never gone 12, but over to Cruz.
But even the Tevin Farmer fight, Murataya had to finish strong in that fight to pull it out of the fire, and he did. Yeah. So he does have that late surge in him.
And he has that professional experience, so that conversation, that, like, whole phenomenon in boxing, like, amateur pedigree. Because Andy Cruz is probably one of the 10 best amateur boxers in the history of amateur boxing. You know, this guy won multiple gold medals. So you look at a guy like that, like, seventh fight trying to win a world title. A little bit of overhyping for sure. But that whole conversation of a guy in an amateur heading over to the pros and not being able to leapfrog right away. Same thing with Lomachenko. Like, obviously, he ran into a Salido that night, and I mean, that fight was crazy with the amount of fouling and everything was going on there. But, like, that conversation where we have a guy that had an unbelievable amateur career and then sputters a little bit in the pros. So maybe we can relook at that. We can relook at the whole, like, amateur versus pro. Because Murataya was just been a pro longer than Andy Cruz. But Andy Cruz undoubtedly had a way better amateur career. So I think we need to rethink that as boxing fans a little bit. There's some out there that did not buy into that. There's some fans that said, I don't care what Andy Cruz did in the amateurs, because this is the pro game and Muay Thai is going to win. Those that picked Muay Thai are riding high, and I salute you.
I mean, there's arguments on both sides, and that's just, you know, how do you want to push it? But that the fight was Bozianis was interviewed afterwards, and he said that exact thing. He goes, it doesn't matter. Like, there was this too soon. He said, no, he was ready. His amateur experience prepared him well for this, and he fought well. He just got beat. Like, guys get beat. His style, because he's not just a pure boxer. He's not a pure, like, defensive fighter. He's not a guy that just makes you, he's not Pernell Whitaker. He's not Shakur Stevenson. He's a more contact fighter. And for heavyweight, I mean, for professionals, it's more exciting. I've liked his progression. But when you're fighting in a weight class at 135, when you're making weight easy and you're fighting a guy who's cutting a lot, the size difference was very, very pronounced in that fight. And if you're going to be in a high contact style, it's going to be a really tough night each and every time if you're going to fight bigger guys with good gas tanks like Muay Thai. I don't think it had much to do. I think it had more to do with the size difference than the experience difference in these two.
So we're talking about Andy Cruz and his style, and now he brings in Bozianis, goes to Philly. He's fighting with that high guard. You know, he's fighting a more meticulous technique, more meticulous approach. Whereas maybe Andy Cruz, he's got a lot of athleticism, man. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of God-given skills. Do you think that Bozianis, do you think that style is the right style for Andy Cruz when you have these God-given abilities, when maybe your hands should be at your waist at this level, at this point in your career, where you still have the reflexes and you use a little more athleticism? Because I thought at times, I was like, man, this guy looks really stiff. He's really plodding. Like, this isn't the Andy Cruz that I remember in his first couple of fights. It's definitely the Andy Cruz I watched in his amateur career. But I do think that you have to apply some changes when you get to the pro ranks. But did they go a little too far with Andy Cruz's approach?
It's funny. I got asked this prior to this fight. Would Bozianis and that style that they're going to employ, just like you said, is that going to hurt him in this fight? And I said, I don't know. We'll see. We're not going to know until fight night. If it doesn't work, then yeah, we're going to say that. If it does work, we're going to make, no, of course it didn't. But you did see Cruz try to adjust in some of the middle rounds. And it looked to me in the middle rounds, like after the first like six or so, I was like, oh, he looks like he's tiring out. But then he got moving. He started fighting more amateurishly. He's trying to score. He's making a miss. He's showing some good slick defense. I was like, that impressed me a lot, that he's able to go back a little bit to that style, which also employs a lot more energy, uses a lot more energy to fight like that. And he did do it at times. But is he that pure of a guy? I don't know. And even on the telecast, one of the announcer commentators said, Andy thinks that he can fight at 130. That was 30? A red flag. Yeah, that was a red flag for me. I was like, if you think you can fight at 130, you should be fighting at 130, dude.
Like, how did that get out? Like, did he say that in a meeting?
I think someone had said that, like, and someone was saying how, you know, big Muay Thai looked, obviously. I think it was Sergio was saying how big he looked, and then Mannix said that Andy said that he could make 130. And again, I'm going to go back to this. The size was a big factor in this fight. You got a guy who's bigger, his gas tank is great, he's got more experience, he's strong. He also fought a great fight. That was a really tough night for Andy Cruz. You know, if he had a little more physicality, you know, that could have been a different outcome. And Muay Thai even said it. He goes, he couldn't hurt me. He was too small. So you saw him taking more risks.
If you're undersized and like, not going to change his style. Like he's spent time with Bozianis, a couple fights now with him, and he spent a whole training camp. Like, you're undersized at 135. Like, use some more of that athleticism. You're not going to be pushing back a guy like Muay Thai, who's huge. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, obviously, it is Monday morning quarterbacking to be like, all right, is this the right style?
I think they thought they could have stung him, because he does have a really good sneaky right hand, and he throws a beautiful 1-2, and you don't see that right hand coming, and he can hurt guys, because you can see at the world-class level, he's not a big puncher. But if he catches you and stings you, you might get some respect. He just wasn't able to do that with Muay Thai all night long. And if you're going to employ a style that has high contact, you're going to have to get respect with a punch, and he just didn't have that.
Yeah, I'm not about to say that Cruz can't get back. He'll hover right around this level. He'll get another title shot soon. I don't think he'll go back to 130 or back. No, I don't think he'll go 130 at all.
Yeah.
I think he'll stay at 135 and go back to the drawing board. Listen, I'm not about to criticize a guy that in his seventh fight was going for a world title. I'm not about to say this guy was overhyped either, because this is a really close fight. A lot of people I respect in the boxing world saying that it was pretty even heading into those final rounds. 7-5 type of fight. I saw a lot of draws out there. So I know we're living in this world where it's black and white, especially boxing Twitter. You really get sucked into that where, oh, this guy's a bum. He's overhyped. I never believed in him anyway. No. Like, it wasn't a blowout. If you got knocked out, yeah, and blasted out in a couple rounds, yeah, I would say, like, we hyped up another Olympic medalist. But no, he was right in this fight. So I do think we'll see more of Andy Cruz. From Muay Thai on the, you know, this dude has arrived. Anyone that didn't know about him now knows about him. Those that knew about him are pumping their chest out today and saying, I told you. You know, I had some guy in my mentions for the last like 2 years begging me to ask Gervonta Davis, when are you going to fight Raymond Muay Thai? And,
I couldn't answer that one.
I also don't think I'll be asking that to Tank. I don't know where he – no one knows where Tank Davis is.
Good right point. Now. If you could find him, then that would be some crack work on your part because no one else can.
I don't think I'd be asking him that if I did find him. Muay Thai is now the – still is the IBF champ and solidified himself. And he's already talking about going up to 140. So this is a fight between – this is potentially a fight between a guy that should be really fighting at 130 and Andy Cruz against a guy in Muay Thai who probably should be at 140. Because right after the fight, you know, he wasn't talking about Abdullah Mason, who's the WBO champion. He was talking about Shakur. I'll fight the winner of Shakur and Teofimo. That could potentially be at 140. There's a lot of mouthwatering matchups for Raymond Muay Thai at lightweight. You got Shakur Stevenson, WBC champion, if he comes back down. 135, you have Abdullah Mason, which could be a top rank fight on a network that we don't know. And then there's the WBA situation, which should get settled in this upcoming year. 135 is fun if Muay Thai stays there. If he's talking about going to 140, then he'll be welcomed at 140, which is a loaded division too. But Muay Thai has got options.
A lot more money at 42. Those are bigger profile fights. Tough fights for sure, but if he's already talking about moving up, and we've talked about how big he looks at the weight, and I think he's actually struggled in the past to make 135. So that doesn't get better as you get older. I was thinking before this fight, the winner is going to emerge as the guy to look at 135. Not saying that that the winner of this fight is the guy at 35. You know, I'm not going to jump to that conclusion right away because there are so many talented guys there and with undefeated records.
Yeah,
it's fight.
Still Shakur.
Yeah, but like you got to look at this like, okay, because either way, if Andy had beaten Muay Thai and Muay Thai beats Andy, that's the biggest win on anyone's record there, you know, other than Shakur, because obviously, but Shakur's technically at 40 right now. So looking at these guys, like, I really like Abdullah Mason, but his standout win is Sam Noakes. I think Andy Cruz is better than Sam Noakes. I think that's a bigger win.
Would you say Shakur's win over Cepeda? Would you say Muay Thai over Cruz is a better win than Shakur over Cepeda?
I would, yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I would.
I just think Cruz is better than Cepeda.
Yeah, no question. So that is a bigger win, and especially the way he did it. It was very impressive. Muay Thai looked great.
Oh yeah.
And so, yeah. My point was that if Muay Thai emerges as that someone is, everyone's going to be looking at him now at 135. And there's so many good matchups to be made, but he moves out. It opens up 35 again. It opens up 35 again.
He should stay again. I agree. Stay as long as you can. I mean, he's 30 years old. He's getting towards that
I think he's 29. Isn't he 29?
You know how horrible it ages.
I think I misspoke and said he was 30 a few shows ago. But
I like to add a year or two, you know. 29. He is 29. He just turned 29 too. So he's got a whole another year of 29. So, you know, he could make that weight. I'm speaking for him right now. He could make that weight, and you could say at 135, you have some pretty good fights here. Like, I don't think the Mason fight would happen next because I don't know if it would make a lot of money. It all depends on what happens this weekend with Shakur Stevenson, because Shakur is the guy at 135.
Shakur wins. Does he stay at 40? Does he? Where does he go from this fight? Win or lose or draw, whatever happens, where does Shakur go? Because I think I just saw him say that he would go back to 35.
I don't know. I really don't. I think I thought I would have a feel for it. I don't. I think he's just chasing big fights, Shakur, at this point. Because he's,
in which case, I don't think 35 is the way to go.
No, because these are great. These are totally fine fights, but 140. You have
they're really good fights, actually. It's just they're not the profile that he's looking for.
I don't know what he's looking for. Like, he's going to be. I honestly think Shakur could go to 147 and look for Agreed. Conor Benn
and that would be for a the very smart, Haney, lucrative move.
Yeah, the Haney and the Ryan situation, the Connor Ben. I think Shakur is in big game hunting right now. So if he beats Teofimo, he's going to be on top of the world, and he's going to take a look at 135. He's going to take a look at 140. He's going to take a look at 147, which is the right thing to do at this point in your career when you can make top dollar. But yeah, like the 135 right now.
I'd love to see Devin and Shakur. That fight really entices me. And I think a lot of people might look at that and be like, oh, it's two guys that aren't going to throw a lot. No, I think that fight's going to be, you know, it's the kind of the things like you said about Tio and Shakur, like, it might be the most entertaining fight. I actually think that Shakur and Devin would be entertaining. I think because Devin throws punches, and he'll throw jabs from the outside. He'll stay long. And I think the way they're going to match wits is going to make this for some good back and forth.
Well, yeah, I just think they should all fight each other somehow.
Yeah,
well, some way, like
in a perfect world,
let's just all have it shake out. But that's a whole nother story for another day. But yeah, 135. If Muay Thai stays there, he could honestly be the guy. Especially if we don't know what Shakur is going to do. Like Muay Thai versus Mason would be interesting. WBA situation is a three-headed monster right now between. Roach,
how about Zepeda? Zepeda could come back into the mix. I wouldn't mind seeing Muay Thai and Zepeda.
Yeah, at least I don't know what's going on with that guy. I mean, he got him to the Shakur fight, which took forever. I don't know where he's at. I mean, yeah, he should definitely be in them. He's definitely top five, top seven type of guy. But you know, between Schofield, Lucas Body, and Lamont Roach, who retweeted me when I tweeted out the lightweight picture, well, the title is, and he said coming soon. So I think Lamont Roach is kind of tipping his hand, because that's another question when it comes to guys jumping different weights. Is Roach, is he going to stay at 140 where it's a little crowded? He's definitely not going to get that Pitbull rematch, because I think Pitbull's looking in a whole different way. And Lamont has told me in interviews and other media members that he would go to 135, back down to 135, where, you know, arguably he beat Tank Davis. He should arguably be the WBA champion right now. So if it's Schofield versus Roach sometime in, you know, the first half of 2026, that's the year we're in right now. Now we're looking at a really fun weight class.
Roach has unfinished business at 35. No question. Yes. He needs to go get that title, get a title. I think that is a smart move. Cruz is not fighting him. That Pitbull Cruz, that is not going to fight Lamont again. Nobody wants three matches with Lamont. we're seeing that. We're seeing that trend. But I think Lamont, I don't think Lamont fits at 140. I don't think he belongs there. I didn't think Isak Cruz belonged there either. So I think 35 is the place for him. And also the fact that he has unfinished business there. Yeah, Lamont at this stage is a big player at 35. And his profile has grown immensely in the past year. He's a big fight for anybody at 35 now. He's a major player at 35 if that's the move. But again, I just forgot he's got a hand injury. So we're coming off hand injury sucks. And you never know the timeline on that. But once he's back, and if he's back at 35, I think you got to have him in the mix with the top guys.
He's in Japan right now, Lamont, according to his.
Good. He's probably getting some good seafood for help heal that hand. All that fresh fish is going to be really good. All those omega-3s.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, omega-3s, anti-inflammation for sure.
Oh, that's probably why he's there. You know, not
that's not out. That's not why he's there. he's having a time of his life, enjoying some time off because he's been working really hard the past year.
Lightweight division is very interesting right now. Congrats to Raymond Murataya for securing a win and changing his career. He's a very interesting guy. And I quickly, Robert Garcia versus Boozy Ennis was like a somewhat of a storyline in this fight because of the Virgil and Boots storyline as well. And right now, you got to give Robert Garcia all the props because he is an outstanding trainer. You know, he moves different than a lot of the other trainers out there. You know, you spend a lot of time doing content with him and working with him. But he was in the news a lot this weekend between the Zuffa stuff and then bringing Murataya to victory. He's just a really good trainer, and he doesn't say a lot in those corners. But I think you don't always have to say a lot in the corner, right, Chris, if you give a good message in the 6 to 8 weeks beforehand?
As someone that has worked with Robert on every level. You know, he's been my trainer. I've had him in corners for fights. I've had him in gyms holding mitts for me. I've had him working corners and sparring. I've worked with him creating content. I've called fights with him. You name it. You know, I've done shows with him. We've done it together. And he's always talked to me about certain guys. He always told me about Virgil Ortiz when he was coming up. This is 7-8 years ago. He was telling me about this kid. Martin Tai is another one. He's been telling me about his discipline. But in terms of him as a coach, you have coaches that are nuts and bolts good guys in the gym, right? The day-to-day guys, the grinding guys. And then you got guys who are good in corners. You rarely have both. And Robert has both. Robert's very good day-to-day. He's in the gym. He lives it. He loves it. He puts the work in with his guys. And then the corner, and at the corner work is where he really blows my mind in terms of how good he is, because he just knows the fight game so well, because he's a former world champion. He's a fighter with a lot of experience at a high level, and he comes from a fighting family. You know, his father trained him. His brother was an incredible multiple division world champion. Robert's been there, done that, knows what he's looking at, and his ability to make calls on the fly is next level. And I think that's his greatest attribute as a trainer. His work in the corner, you don't have to say much. In fact, you shouldn't say too much. Too much is bad in the corner. And I think Robert walks that line perfectly.
Yeah, he was great. I know that he was on Saturday night. He was just bully him, bully him. He just kept saying bully him. And I saw a few tweets. It's like, that's all he's going to say. And I'm like, these guys, he's been with Muay Thai his whole career, and they have a game plan. And bully him was the right game plan, because that's how Muay Thai won, because he just stalked him. He walked down Cruz and then went to the body. Just an outstanding game plan. Everything that went into that. And it's nice to see Robert Garcia. From all accounts, seems like a really solid guy. And great guy. Definitely is the best trainer in boxing right now, hands down. Let's go over to Zuffa 1. The Zuffa 1 recap. So they had their big show on Friday night. I was locked in from the early hours. I put out a video, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it all. I thought that was a pretty fair video. I got a lot of responses to that saying, Dan, you nailed it here, man. Great job, Dan. Dan, oh my God, you're the voice of boxing, Dan. You're the voice of a generation. I can't believe how accurately you depicted this night. You're so fair and you're firm, like our guy Cortez, the referee. No, this isn't about me. It was about Zuffa. It wasn't about me. It was about Dana White. Yeah, because it was a big, big Dana celebration last week between UFC and Paramount. Let's get into the good. Let's start with the good, because let's give it fair, because this is why we're here. It is boxing after all, and most people don't care about all the bells and whistles and the politics. They just want to see good fights. I thought the fights were good. They weren't outstanding. They weren't poor. So the matchmaking was solid. It was a long night, which means evenly matched fights. It was only a couple stoppages. From the first fight on, I thought the fights were solid. I'll say right off the bat, Chris, the fights were good. And I think they're going to get better.
Yeah, solid fights, boxing fan fights. You know, they, like you said, evenly matched, good scraps, entertaining. We had an upset. Julian Rodriguez scoring that win over Cain Sandoval was entertaining.
Not an upset,
a lot of
if
fun.
You listen to our show.
No, it's not. Julian Rodriguez, Hammer Hands, guy who's been around for a long time, hasn't really got his due. Was coming up on the top rank, lost to Jose Pedraza. Some would say maybe he took that fight a little too early, maybe he didn't take that fight as seriously, and then kind of fell off. But now he's back, and he's making noise, man. He's got two upsets back to back, undefeated guys. So and he's fun. He's fun to watch. He always has been. His nickname is Hammer Hands for a reason. He can punch, and he gets in the mix and will fight. So. Some talented guys in there. Floyd Diaz, Robert Merriweather looked very good. He's a fun fighter. So Troy Nash, yes. Yep. A lot of good looking undefeated fighters fighting on the card that were in some pretty tough scraps. So yeah, in terms of the fights were good.
Fights were solid. The production was really nice. Very,
very nice. That was my top takeaway of positivity was the production was excellent.
Right. You watch a lot of boxing productions these days. I thought it was clearly right away it's the best I've seen in a while. Very flashy graphics, they're just in and out, the packages were nice, it was smooth, it was the pacing was really good, especially on the undercard. There was a lot of fights and they moved it, get those fights going. That was good. Any other things that popped into your mind that were good before we get into what we didn't like?
We had Joe Tessitore back. That was good.
Yes. Love Joe Tessitore.
Having our boy Joe, I was very happy to hear that he was on the card. Then it was great to hear his voice. Joe, we need Joe back at boxing.
Yeah, Joe
on a regular basis.
We had Joe Tess, Molly Karam from First Take is at the desk. She is a pro. Tarver at the desk. I would say the production / broadcast clean, and it's going to get better. Fights were solid. Like hammer hands in the ring afterwards, begging for the money was a little strange, and that was a little UFC. I've seen that in the UFC quite often. I've often not mocked the fighters because I want everyone to get paid, but it's just become a staple of the UFC where a guy in the ring is begging for the fighter bonus or begging Dana, I got this, I got kids, my kids need to have me, blah, blah, blah. That was hammer hands after his win. Let's get into what we didn't like. I don't like the Apex.
Nope.
At all. Nope. That brought back bubble memories. There's no crowd. There's no atmosphere. I know they're going to bump it up. Stale.
Just stale. Stale.
I know they're going to bump it up to 1,100 by the end of the year. That's still not enough. I don't know if this fight card would have warranted more than 500 to 1,000 people, given it was all undercard type of fighters. But I just don't like the Apex. I think they're going to do a lot of fights there. I was talking to some UFC people on Friday night. They were like, this is what we've been dealing with for years now, because I know they put a lot of UFC fights in there. I think the experience probably is great. People that were there said this is unreal. It's like a fight fans' dream in there. This did not come off on television well. It was just quiet. There was no atmosphere. Felt like I was watching either a Saudi fight or I was back in 2020 and they were pumping in fake crowd noise and it was dead in there.
Definitely bubble vibes. Very, very bubbly vibes back in 2020. I worked a lot of those shows for Top Rank. We were in the bubble. We worked those shows out of Vegas. The lack of atmosphere comes through powerfully on television. Like it really comes through on when you're watching it. And when you're in there, it's really, really, really tough. The bubble vibes, not good. The Apex, but I knew that coming in. I was like, oh, it's going to be the Apex. It's going to be like that. And sure enough, it was. I don't know how they fixed that. I don't know if making 1,100 will work. But that stale air was there. How about, you didn't bring this up. How about them uniforms?
I was getting to that next.
So for everyone behind the scenes, I saw our friend Freddie Roach post his uniform. Like it was this folded up clothing, pre-event. And, we didn't know if there was going to be uniforms yet. And I just texted to Dan. I go, oh, here come the uniforms. Sure enough, uniforms. Yeah.
They were wearing Zuffa trunks with your names on the front. They had Zuffa, different type of Zuffa like robes. They had like the Mexican one with the hole cut in the middle. It's just Zuffa
option of white or black shoes. It looked like
it went with the whole. It baked into the whole cake, and I had some people really, Dan, you're really going to criticize uniforms. The uniforms indicate more than just uniforms. It indicates a wide arching theme here of it being very sterile, of it being very corporate. Boxing is not that. Boxing is the theater. It's theater. It's a scene. It's a party. You're supposed to express yourself. You're supposed to have a crazy walkout, have your own music, have your own outfits, have your own identity. Like it's about the fighter. Boxing is a star-driven sport, where UFC is about the sport. You're celebrating a sport. You're watching a sport, and it's worked for them. I know it took a while, and I think UFC fans don't even understand. They don't even they don't know the other side. But you have Emiliano Vargas tweet, "Oh, good fights, but I don't like the uniforms." That's a fighter, Chris. You're a fighter. Like you can talk on this too. It's like, well, what does that even mean, Dan? What are you talking? You're criticizing uniforms? Yes, it points to a bigger picture of a corporate type of feeling for these fights.
From a fighter's perspective, look good, feel good, fight good. Fits matter. Guys really care about their fits leading up to a fight, how you look going into the ring. You're going and doing something really, really dangerous, and you want to make sure you look good and feel good at doing it. Also, the individuality. That's what boxing is all about. That's why we make so much goddamn money, because we are the company. We're not a company men. We are the business. And that's the difference between what the UFC model is, where you're tuning into the UFC event. You're not tuning into Paddy Pimblett. Some people are, but it's a UFC event. I'm watching UFC, whatever. Paddy Pimblett's on it, but they go by the number. No, it's one
like
call-
NFL. Like I'm watching NFL football because it's the popular sport. It's the same thing with UFC. I agree. I mean,
yeah. So, but in boxing, like I'm not tuning into the Matchroom show 723. I'm tuning into Mordecai versus Andy Cruz because I want to watch Mordecai versus Andy Cruz. I'm not tuning into the event. I'm tuning into the fighters that I want to see fight. So it's that different individuality is a big aspect. And the, and just your outfit's a part of it. It's part of it. You stand out. Some of our biggest stars are guys who have crazy outfits. Guys like Prince Nazim, you know, he's always was dressed a certain way. Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather's fits were a big part of how he came to the ring. His big leather trunks, when he did the Mexican killer, when he wore the Mexican hat, all that stuff matters. And it helps to individualize these athletes. And mentioned, not also, do I mention the guys I mentioned all made tons of money. This, it affects the money. That's down the line. You're trying to phase out the individuality. So it's more of a company, more of a show, so they can pay you less. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to work. I know we're looking at a small thing here, the uniforms, but like I said, it's part of a wider picture of the Zuffa takeover and them controlling everything. The plan for them is to strike a deal with a company, whether it's Reebok with the UFC, now it's Venom with the UFC, that they supply the trunks, they supply the fight gear for the UFC fighters. You know, there's different options, but for the most part, you're wearing Venom. No, you have to. So for Zuffa, they don't have that deal yet. They will. They'll strike a deal, and they will find a brand, and they will be making your trunks if you're a Zuffa fighter. They will be making your giving you options for walkouts. And do the fighters – does that trickle down to the fighters? I don't know. Those are questions that we don't know. Those are questions that a lot of UFC fans or a lot of UFC media were asking. So the uniforms do matter. I mean, it does matter for sure because it's part of the theme. It's part of what we're seeing here. It's part of watching boxing in an apex or a controlled environment. That's what UFC is. That's what Zuffa is going to be. It's a controlled environment. We're going to control the building. We own this building. We own everything that's going on in here. We own the uniforms. We own essentially the fighters. That's what they want. And for some fighters, they're fine with it. You know, Julian Rodriguez, for instance, is signed throughout the rest of the year. And he is now a Zuffa boxer. And he says, I want to be the Zuffa welterweight champion. That's what he said after the fight. I want to be the first Zuffa welterweight champion. Dana, pay me. I want my bone. He got a fighter bonus. He's all in. So he's fine with the uniforms. There's going to be some fighters that are completely fine with it. There are going to be some fighters that aren't. That's the great pull here, and the push and pull with Zuffa is them figuring out who they can do this with and who they can't. Because I think they can do this with the Julian Rodriguez's of the world and the Robert Merriweather's, right? You know, like you guys want all the benefits of Zuffa? Well, here's another thing you have to deal with is we control a lot of stuff.
Well, you nailed it because there's going to be guys you can do that with and guys you can't. And Julian Rodriguez, I had mentioned, you know, he had taken that loss against Pedraza when he was getting pushed by Top Rank and then really fell off. He was brought in as an opponent in back-to-back fights. He was quote-unquote B-sides, you know, by the promotion themselves, and he scored wins because the guy could fight. But he was not in a good place until these opportunities came up. MVP first and then Zuffa. Look at a guy like you mentioned him, the Canadian.
Lucas Body?
Yeah, Lucas Body. He was another one. Brought in as an opponent on MVP card. Scores knockout of the year, then steps into that position. Like, he was kind of floundering as well in terms of getting the big opportunity. He wasn't getting the opportunities that his skill deserved. And Julian's one of those guys as well. Those guys are going to come into this happily because what's the alternative? You weren't signed to Matchroom. You weren't signed to Top Rank. You now have an organization that's going to get you set fights. It's very enticing for a lot of either Definitely. Young guys or guys who fell through the cracks. So you're going to get that, but then the guys who are skyrocketing, yeah, it's going to be really tough to tell them what to wear.
Back to Robert Garcia. He was on Najee Cigar Talk Live last night and said that, I have a lot of guys that want to fight for Zuffa and they pay well. And everyone, a lot of my fighters are looking there. Robert got into it on Twitter. Robert was everywhere this weekend. He got into it on Twitter.
I say it all the time. The busiest man in boxing is Robert Garcia.
Right, he was hitting it from all angles. He went on a live with Najee. He was on Twitter fighting off trolls who said, I can't believe you're going to send some of your fighters to Zuffa. And then he wrote back, like, are you paying for my fighters' lives? Are you paying their salaries? Because I have 30 fighters, he said. Some of them will go to Zuffa. Some of them will stay with Matchroom. Some of them will fight for PBC. So I agree with that. I think we've been pretty fair with our assessment here that there's a benefits to fighting for Zuffa. Certain fighters need to go there. It's just that eventually they want to take it all. Eventually they don't want to give you an option. Eventually, if they have their way, there won't be any matchrooms out there or any other place.
Yeah, it's cornering the market. It's going to take time, but like this is how you do it. You make some big signings that are going to cost a lot of money, but then you take up all those. You take up the. So listen, you've never been to Robert Garcia's training camp, have you?
No, I'd love to though.
It's a factory.
Oxnard.
Yeah, well, I don't know where it is now. It used to be Oxnard. It might be Riverside. I don't know. It's but regardless, it's a factory of fighters. There are, like you said, you got 30 fighters. There's probably 15 to 20 of them that are out there just living the dog life. That kind of money from Zuffa is really enticing. Oh, I can consistently fight. Oh, and I'm going to get paid more than the market of what I'm getting out here on club shows. Yeah, that sounds great. Kern's great for those guys. I don't care about a uniform. I can't afford my trunks anyway.
Yeah, you know, I'll wear this shit on my head.
I get the ability to train at a state-of-the-art facilities and get fed the whole time and be able to make weight and all these different things. Yeah, it's super enticing for those types of guys. But yeah, you start at the ground level. You scoop up all that talent. That talent grows into being the talent of the future. Yeah, the game plan's pretty obvious.
Yeah, and that's something that, like, Dan, why are you spending so much time on uniforms? Why are you spending so much time talking about Zuffa 1? Why are you spending so much time, like, meticulously breaking down every aspect of it? Because I think they're going to succeed. I think, like I said, one day this could be the norm. Like, it might not be another option out there where there's big, huge fights that we've come accustomed to. Like, you know, like a Tyson Fury, for instance, type of fight night where it's a grand old at a stadium and all that. Like, who knows? That's the scary part, because we just don't know. That's why I'm spending so much time looking at uniforms and Apex, and because we've seen it with the UFC.
In a couple of years, it might be the only thing we're talking about.
That's what I mean. That's
Godzilla. Godzilla is slowly coming up through under the water. He's underneath the water, coming up.
That's what I'm talking about. That's why we spend so much time on. One thing I didn't like, the broadcasts in particular, Max, just way over the top with the messaging. The Zuffa messaging, it felt like, hey, we're going to jam this down your throat. We're going to hit you over the head with what Zuffa is, why we're great, why these fights are different than the rest. Like, no, they're not different than the rest. Like, I've worked 20, 30 MVP shows. I worked endless amount of Debella prospect shows. You on ProBox have watched some of the great prospects come through. It's all about matchmaking. It's all about the people you hire, you know, in the trenches making these fights. Well, mostly it's about the fighters. It's about these guys getting in there and wanting to lay it all out there because they don't know when their next meal is and they want to, you know, one day be a world champion. It's not because they're fighting for the Zuffa banner. And that's the problem I had with Max right away, was that he was just so over the top with things are different here at Zuffa. This first round was awesome because it's Zuffa. Oh, you saw that? The judges got it right. It's Zuffa. That's why. Like, dude, like, pump the brakes a tiny bit and just enjoy the fights. And once the fights start, just call the fights. Like, I don't want to hear anything more about promotions and what makes you guys different as the fights are going on. Because that's not – you're not going to fool boxing fans. Like, boxing fans are not stupid. You can't fool us. Just we know what it is. We know what the messaging is. Just tone it down a tiny bit.
But Max knows boxing fans. He's been in the sport a long time, man. He's been out of the sport for a while. Apparently, he's forgotten where he came from. But I don't know. I don't know if their target audience truly is the boxing fans. Boxing is a pretty niche sport. They're trying to expand this.
What are they going for then? UFC fans. They don't like boxing.
That's why they're doing the messaging. They're trying to get the same look, the same feel, the familiarity of what UFC is like. They're trying to do that with boxing. It's just tough because, like, the main event of this fight, of this card, was Callum Walsh, who Max, since we're talking about Max, brought up him looking like Roy Jones, or fighting like Roy Jones Jr. at one point. I almost kicked my laptop off the balcony of my hotel. Like, when he said that, and it's crazy because the rest of the broadcast team went totally flat when he said that. It's like, And then I think you also described him like Mike McCallum at some point. It was just so over the top, these references.
It's always been like that, though. Max has he loves the historical references.
Yeah, he'll get an idea in his head. He loves Pernell Whitaker. But I understand that.
But someone Roy Jones that Jr., has called fights, right? I call fights that I'm very new to it, and you have been doing it longer than me, but I'm very new to it. I know the do's and the don'ts. I know never compare a prospect or low-level guy to an all-time great. Ever.
Yeah.
Just but don't. So because you're never going to win. You're always going to come off wrong. Even if I understood what Max was saying, he was saying that Callum Walsh.
Because he wasn't using the jab.
Wasn't jabbing. He was hooking. He was hooking his way in. Oh, you know who did that at the best level possible? Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah,
just
but he.
Don't, just
he,
don't he, say it.
But Roy did it because of his crazy athleticism and hand speed. Callum Walsh has neither of that. He was doing it because he wasn't boxing well. He just wasn't using his jab. He wasn't using a jab properly.
That goes to the whole messaging part. They're not going to criticize. They're not going to criticize Callum Walsh, who I thought
criticism is part of commentary, and that's messaging is the problem. You have to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I understand you don't want to shit on guys, and you shouldn't. But you need to be able to criticize when it's there, because then you're going to lose the fan base. No one is going to watch you just glaze a guy because he's the guy. And people are going to really turned off by that. And people have been from what the commentary has been. But also, so my original point was with the UFC and this card. So the main event of this card was Callum Walsh against Ocampo. The fight wasn't great. It wasn't a barn burner. It wasn't entertaining. It wasn't competitive. And then the main event of the UFC card, the Paddy Pimblett Gaethje fight, was sick. Killing each other. I mean, that was one of the best fights I've seen in years in the UFC. And it gets people excited. That was a good night for the UFC. And I know we're going to get into this. I'm sure you've got it on your list. But Dana White's talk after the event when he got interviewed. Compare those two interviews. Compare the interview of Dana getting interviewed for the UFC, post-UFC fight, and the post-Zuffa fight. The post-Zuffa fight, he couldn't get his words out. He was stumbling over himself. He was so...
Well, I think I know why he was.
I mean, he got asked if, you know, what he thought about the car, and he kind of had
I think
to
he didn't
like
it.
Yeah, of course.
I think that was obvious. He was holding back. I think he knew that there's a lot to more work to be done.
But him not being able to keep his hand tight to the chest, like you saw him flustered. And the opposite was happening during the UFC fight. When you talk about the UFC fight, because it was an amazing
that's
fight.
His baby. I mean, he knows that baby. Really well. Yeah, but his interview after, for those that watched the post-fight show, I like that too. I like that they have a pre-fight show, and I like that they have a post-show. I hope they continue with that, because sometimes these fights go right off the air. And that's when you're at your highest high. You're at your fever pitch. So give us something to cool down a little. It's like a little cigarette afterwards. Like, give us something where we can just sit around and talk. So Heidi Angel interviewed Dana White afterwards, and she's like, "So what did you think?" Like, and he can't get the word. I thought he was coming off like he was drunk. I know he wasn't.
He's flustered. Yeah.
He couldn't get the words out. This is a guy that speaks for a living, hypes shit up. Couldn't get the words out because I honestly think he wasn't 100% happy with the product or happy with certain things, aspects of it. I know he was in the truck for a lot of the night. Then she goes, "Oh, well, who caught your eye?" He couldn't name a single fighter. He wasn't about to say Callum Walsh because I think deep down he knows that Callum Walsh isn't the goods. And it wasn't about to criticize his performance because they brought Walsh in there to stop Ocampo. Like, if they had their way and it was a script here, Walsh would have stopped Ocampo in four or five rounds.
That's why I said that was a bad opponent.
Really? 147-pounder up to middleweight that's been knocked out?
Yeah, but he went the distance with Fondora. And if you don't knock him out in the first round the way Spence and Zhu did, you're going to be compared to them. And that's a problem. And not only did he not do that, it wasn't even a fun fight. And Ocampo looked horrible. Like, he looked like he's regressed a lot, or maybe he was always that bad, but like, just he was walking forward with his head over his feet.
First round they were throwing heavy leather, and I was like, all right, this is gonna end quick. And then once I, you know, you texted me, he was like, yeah, Walsh doesn't have any power. And then I saw the writing on the wall. I quickly made a live bet and switched to Walsh decision. Walsh is definitely, I think he might have reached his ceiling. I don't think he can compete at 160. 154 is loaded. I don't think he can compete there. That's a whole nother story with Walsh. I just doesn't have the jab. He telegraphs a lot of his shots. He just doesn't have a lot of power. Like, he seems like a great guy by all accounts. He's works hard, and you know, I like him as a person. I just don't know what his ceiling is, and I think we might have reached it or quickly approaching his ceiling.
Yeah, and it's tough when you're trying to make that guy the tip of your spear of your new organization and putting him in the main event. And Paulie made a good point about this. He's like, you're actually doing the kid a disservice because he's not ready for main events. He's not done yet. Like, he's not like he needs more time in the oven to be cooked, to be paired for these kinds of fights. Because this fight, didn't win him fans. The last fight didn't win him fans, but they were both huge platforms and a lot of people got to see him. And a lot of people are saying what you're saying. It's like, eh, I don't know. I'm not that impressed. Or downright saying like, ah, he's not that good. You know, that's not the way you want to enter into the public eye. So if you would have waited a little bit more and gotten him some more builder fights to get to this position, maybe he'd be more prepared for these. But for right now, he's not.
All in all, I thought Zuffa won. It had a very UFC feel to it. It felt controlled. The messaging was a little over the top. They wore uniforms and all that. Fights were decent. Will they get better? I believe so. Zuffa 2 and Zuffa 3, which are planned in the very near future, look pretty solid. You hear Dana White after the fight, we're going to make this better. This is just the first one. By the end of the year, judge us at the end of the year. So that's what they're saying, and I'm kind of, that's the wait-and-see approach. But if overall, like the feel of it, because a lot that's the big thing here with Zuffa, what does it feel like? For the first one, it felt a lot like the UFC, and it felt very sterile, and it just doesn't have an identity yet. And it will, because we've worked on, me and you have worked on shows that are just starting out. And the, when you compare, like I compare MVP 1 to where they are now, it's a completely different machine. Like they, you bring in new people, you bring in new fighters, you bring in new production, you get a feel for it. So, and this is on a grand scheme here with Zuffa. They got some of the biggest, most powerful people involved with it. Turkey, Dana, Nick Khan sitting front row, Paramount Plus, great production. So,
and I mean, something good about them is, you know, them being new to the sport, they're going to be willing to make adjustments. And I think that's their biggest strength, is that they're not going to be stuck in the old ways, because there are no old ways. This is new. This is a new venture and the adjustments are going to happen. That's why Dana was saying, he's like, wait till the end of the year. You know, we got a lot of work to do. He was honest about that. And they're going to put in the work. Like you said, they've got endless money and talent to figure this out and they're going to make adjustments. It's going to get better fast. And I'm curious to see by the end of the year, how much different these shows are going to be, because I don't see how it couldn't be. Unless they completely bail and pull out, I think the end of the year they're going to have some great shows.
That would be pretty bad. Zuffa 2 is on Sunday, this Sunday, so they have they're coming right back.
Quick turnaround.
Butiev and Pochuk. Jose Valenzuela.
That could be a good fight. It's not the most interesting matchup, but it could be a really entertaining fight.
But right away, that's a totally different type of show than what we saw Zuffa 1. I mean, you have Hot Rod versus Vodzik. I mean, Vodzik is a former world champion.
Venezuela, much higher level guys.
World champion. Butiev, world title challenger. Boachuk, right at the cusp of a championship. So that's a different type of card. Zuffa 3, apparently, could be March 8th. No, Zuffa 3, I think, is going to be F.A. Jogba versus Charles Martin. Then they have Opetaia in the crowd. They have him do a stare down with the other champion at Cruiserweight. I don't know how to say his last name. He just beat Bada Jack. His last name is Mikelian. So they have a stare down.
Mikelian.
Yeah. Who just beat Bada Jack.
Mikelian's good. That's a nice fight.
I don't know for sure. They haven't come out and said that this is going to be the fight for Opetaia, but you do a stare down and you post it on Zuffa and you have Rick Reno in the middle of it. And you tell us that Opetaia will be fighting for titles. So you have to figure that's the next fight for Opetaia. You have to figure that's that March 8th date that Opetaia's co-manager put out there. So that's decent too. So the next three events for Zuffa are pretty much locked in and they're getting better, and we're going to see bells, like things change. That's what I think we saw with Dana White after the fight. Like it wasn't him like forgetting how to talk or like having a moment. Like, I just think he was like didn't want to say his real thoughts.
Yeah, I think it was also he's used to winning, so he's flustered. So
right?
Yeah, that's certainly what it seemed like, especially like you said, a guy who speaks for a living and on stage and after fights for decades now. I've never seen him stutter like that.
That was nuts.
So maybe he was mad. Maybe he was. I can't be caught off guard. Like, you know, you're doing.
Did he say something
show.
About the bathrooms?
He was saying.
You texted me that. I was like, yo, I missed that part. He said we have great bathrooms.
Yeah, he was muttering, like he was answering something, and he kind of was just like trailing off and trying to say all the positive things. And he said like we got bathrooms now. We got good bathrooms. And I was just like, ugh.
No way he said that.
Yeah, dude, go back and it's. Even the comment I said, a lot of people responded to it. They heard it too. I'm not making it up.
No, because my brother told me the same. He goes, did you hear the bathroom comment? I was like, no, yeah. I thought you guys were just kidding. I thought you were just poking fun at the Apex. There's a theory out there from a guy that I follow who's really, he's in the boxing media, T Street Controversy on Twitter, that he believes that Paramount put the pressure on Zuffa to put this show on before they were ready. Like, you know, we want content. We need content. We just signed a $7 billion deal.
Give us
content. So January, we want Zuffa Boxing 1. Zuffa's like, we're not ready yet. You know, we don't have everything, our ducks in a row just yet. Like,
too bad. March. Make it happen.
Exactly. And then what you saw was basically a beta test on Friday night, which was actually not bad. Like, I know we're poking holes at these little things, but they had a full-fledged pregame show. They had great production. They pulled off 10 fights. Wasn't horrible. Like, the fights are going to get better. The things that we're talking about can be improved on. Like, I don't know if Max is going to – I don't know. Do you think he even looks at the Twitter? Do you think he hears it? Is anyone going to tell? I think Zuffa loves it.
No. He's being a full-on company man. That's
crazy.
Yeah, that he's doing his role. That's his role on the telecast. You know, he's the name guy. He's a legacy in the sport, and he's there to pump the narrative, and he's doing it.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. I like that we can speak freely on it. I think a lot of our listeners expect that from us, because as you could see in this boxing media game, there's a lot of compromised members in it. There's a lot of people not giving you the truth. Or giving you just enough, or telling you what you want to hear, or not giving you the full end of it. So I think we're always going to give it to you straight here.
Yeah, and yeah, that's exactly right. We at Inside Boxing Live cannot be compromised.
We can. We just haven't been yet. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. No, the check's not big enough yet. We gotta the offers haven't gotten big enough.
Let's have ourselves a week. This is going to be a very busy, busy week. We have three different fight nights on Saturday night. We have a pro box that you're traveling to in Maryland. I'm working a sumo event on Friday night over in
Westchester. I wish I could make it to that, but I'm working that night. So, yeah,
that's going to be nuts.
Sumo's cool.
Yes, the World Sumo. It's going to be amazing over in Westchester. Go buy tickets now.
If this boxing thing doesn't work out for us, we can switch over to sumo. We can 100%. Just do sumo podcast. There's got to be a market for that. It's probably a small niche, but you know.
I have in my first sumo event that I'll be attending, and then also working. I'm doing sideline reporting. I don't even know what's the sideline. I'm going to be like the minute they finish their match, I'm going to be interviewing them.
How's your Japanese? Have you been practicing?
No, horrible. Okay. And we also
have
our party.
If we actually did get into sumo, I would definitely compete. I would go in there. I'd put on the undergarment thing and I was a wrestler. I'd probably be pretty good at it.
They're not all like huge. Like I know there's they have weight classes. Think of a fat Japanese guy, but no, they have weight classes.
No, they have guys like me. That
it's gonna be amazing. And then of course Saturday night our pre-fight party. Buy your tickets now, $20 on Eventbrite. Had the link here, $25 at the door. Yeah, it's gonna be a very, very busy week. I'm ready for it because I've been snowed in for the last 48 hours, looking out the window, seeing a foot of snow here in Long Island. Foot,
dude. I'm supposed to snow again this weekend. I think. I mean,
that would suck.
Packing for my flight. This is gonna be tough. I got a bunch of. I'm going from South Florida to DC, and then I'm taking an Amtrak to New York City, and then in New York City we have our event. And then I got my dad's birthday on Sunday on Long Island.
That's gonna be cold, bro. Generational freeze, they said. It's not going to be above freezing until February.
Yikes.
We'll keep you warm here on Inside Boxing Live. We'll be back later on in the week to break down all these events, all these fights. Teofimo Shakur, Bakram, fighting Josh Kelly, and Abbas Barao looking to take the title from Xander Zayas. So boxing world, full-fledged. Full systems go from now to the end of the year, Chris. You ready?
Very, very ready. It's been a nice little reprieve. I'm ready to go back to work this weekend. Ready for the next couple months. Let's go.
All right, everyone. Have a great week. I'll see you later on in the week. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Theo's the end. See you next time.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.